Lavio here. Welcome back to Hoops HD. As we start our podcast series up here, we've taken a little bit of a break. You heard us back on the 4th of July talking about the Brad Stevens move to the Boston Celtics. Lee Delvecchio joining me here tonight. We got some other things to talk about that we wanted to tackle. Lee, great to hear from you again. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. The heat's finally subsided here, and it's really college basketball is pulling off a little bit of what the NBA is doing now. College basketball's turned into a year-round sport, but not necessarily for all the discussions that we probably would want to have about college
basketball. Right. These aren't healthy discussions or healthy things that are going on with college
basketball. They're unfortunately necessary. They're healthy kind of like a root canal. You have to have it, but you're not going to enjoy it.
Well, you know, this is the problem, I think, a little bit with college basketball, because there's less attention on it in the summer. All the bad things happen in the summer, basically.
Yeah, nothing ever good happens after 11 at night. Nothing good in college basketball has ever happened in July.
Yeah.
Ever.
Basically, if you hear anything college basketball-wise between, gosh, the start of the NHL playoffs and the end of the World Series,
Or the end of the NHL playoffs.
That's a good point. But anyway, so a couple of things we wanted to talk about right off the bat here. First of all, we've got new coaches in Southern California. Both of the Los Angeles members of the Pac-12, have changed coaches. Of course, you knew about Steve Alford. That was a relatively big story that happened right in the middle of the NCAA tournament. And there's plenty of things we could talk about in regards with Alford to UCLA. We're only going to touch on a couple of them. But many of you probably forgot until the ESPYs aired a couple of days ago that Andy Enfield from Dunk City, a.k.a. Florida Gulf Coast, has gone to USC along with his wife. His wife's there as well. That seems to be what most people are interested
that's
in.
That's key.
Yes. So you've got Alford and Enfield, two brand-new coaches in Southern California. And there have been some articles written about them, and there was one today, Lee, and there were some interesting things that came out of that article, let's say.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's the 5 millionth installment of a transfer saga problem. And basically, Andy Enfield is specifically pursuing Isaac Hamilton, who's a very highly rated recruit in the class of 2013, or the one that starts this year. Is it 13? Is it 14? I can't keep up. Anyway, Isaac Hamilton, a very, very good recruit from St. John Bosco High out in Southern California, who committed to Tim Floyd rather surprisingly.
I'm sure he did that because he really wanted top-level basketball instruction. That was the only reason he was going to UTEP.
Surprisingly enough, he committed to Tim Floyd. That's always a surprising thing to do, be it an athletic director, a basketball player, a fan. More surprising when it's Tim Floyd as the head coach of the University of Texas, El Paso. So Isaac Hamilton committed to UTEP quite some time ago, and now Andy Enfield has tried to go after him. Basically, why wouldn't he? I mean, it's UTEP and it's Tim Floyd. Isaac basically has tried to get out of his signed letter of intent. And Tim Floyd and UTEP, taking what we'll say and believe, and for even good reasons, about Tim Floyd out of it, Tim Floyd, and I think in this case has some right, said, no, we're not going to let you transfer out. The presented reason for why he wants to transfer out of UTEP in Conference USA, I think, or the Mountain West.
I've lost track at this stage.
Not in the Pac-12.
No.
Wanting to transfer to USC and enroll there in the Pac-12. Was he wants to stay closer to home because of an ill grandmother. And by the way, of the last 10 controversial transfer stories, Galen, wouldn't you agree that about 9 of them have centered around the argument of transfer closer to home to ill grandmother or grandfather?
Or just ill family member, yes.
Right. Tim Floyd denied the request, and he's talking about it. The quote that he gave to the Los Angeles Times in a story published this evening by Diane Pewson, is Isaac made his decision for all the right reasons in regards to him deciding to attend UTEP. If this appeal is allowed, we might as well not have letters of intent. That was Tim Floyd's comment, and the Enfield declined to comment. And I completely agree with Tim Floyd on this. I don't like holding kids hostage. I agree that it makes less sense if you want to, I mean, why would you go to UTEP? But you know what? He committed to UTEP. He signed a letter of intent there. It's not Division III. It's a program that's been in the past. If your argument is he's playing for a coach that isn't very good, I'll agree with you. But it's not a bad program, and he made the decision. He knew it was Tim Floyd and it was UTEP when he made the decision. It was he had a lot of good offers. I believe I'll have to check if USC had offered him when he signed there, but I'm pretty certain UTEP wasn't his only offer.
You know, there was a Jack Handy piece on Saturday Night Live once, and it went something like, you know, if you ever drop your keys into a river of molten lava, let them go because, man, they're gone. That's kind of how I feel about recruits that want to get out of letters of intent. It's like you're not doing anybody a favor by keeping them to the letter of intent. They don't want to be there. They're going to be resentful. They're not going to give 100% effort. It's going to be a bad situation all around. These are 17, 18-year-old kids. I mean, when you made a decision when you were 17, were you going to stick to that decision no matter what, or did you change your mind on a regular basis?
I for college, I stuck to it, but I also made mine kind of late. But once I made the
decision. No, I don't mean college. I mean just like going to Dairy Queen versus going to Arby's,
It took me 20 minutes tonight to decide where to go.
Right. I mean.
Here's the argument I would make, though. Like, I get the kid changed his mind, but like, I mean, where do you draw the line? Is it his? All right, here's Isaac Hamilton's offers according to Scout. He was offered a letter of intent by Washington, UNLV, UCLA under Ben Howland, but surely would have also been offered by Steve Alford, San Diego State, Baylor, and UTEP. Now, he chose far and away the worst of the six.
Well,
I mean, but he made that choice. But that means he went through a process where he saw all of them and decided on UTEP.
No.
He passed on UNLV at San Diego State. I won't even try and hold UCLA up because what the shitstorm happened there. But he passed on San Diego State and UNLV.
Look, it's easy to figure out what happened here. UTEP offered him the most money. And then when Enfield got hired at USC, they offered him more money. And he's like, I'd rather go there. And you know what? I'm fine with that.
Okay. Yeah, probably. But you really think UTEP offered more money than Bryce Drew?
It's Tim Floyd.
But it's Bryce Drew.
I think Bryce Drew's well has dried up from a money perspective.
Well, then you also got to make the argument that Bryce Drew's got to spread it around. You know, he's trying to land seven.
Well, that's what I meant. Like, I don't think this kid's quite good enough to get the big money. He's not getting, like, you know, his chip's not landing in the middle of the Plinko board. Let's put it that way.
Hold on. He might have, quote, only been a four-star recruit, but he was probably the top-rated four-star recruit in the country. I mean, if this kid isn't enough to get the top-end money, then you're doing it wrong. This kid's absolutely worth it.
Hunter Perea was a top-level four-star recruit, too.
I think he's better than Hunter Perea from what
I would hope so if he's getting offered that. My point is this. Look, there's lots of things that go into recruiting that we don't see, and particularly when Tim Floyd is involved at all. There's a lot more going on that we're not seeing. And so, look, I think that from that perspective, Floyd just needs to let the kid go. He got beat. And what I hate about Floyd more than anything else is he whines without really doing anything. Like, he's not going to the NCAA and naming names. He's not going to the press and saying, these coaches are doing these things that are irritating me. He's just basically going and saying, the kid is at fault. Well, look, there's a lot more to it. There always is. It's not just the kid's fault that things are going the way that they're going.
Yeah, but at the same time, this is why I dislike the transfer process. I wish this kid that Hamilton could just say, you know what? USC is a better situation. I'm closer to home. It's a better team. This is a different setup than when I may have been looking at USC. I hate it because he can't say that.
Well,
because
you're willing to take Floyd's, you're willing to back up Tim Floyd on this, so you don't seem to hate it that much.
Well, I hate that. You really think there's a sick family member here?
No, no. But look, it's, you know what it's like. It's like the kids who they go through their 4 years of their bachelor degree, they graduate, and they say, "Oh, I want to go somewhere where they offer this master's degree in forestry management, and they don't offer that here at the school I'm currently at, so I'm going to transfer there." Like, the whole thing is BS. The way that the...
that's my problem with it. Just own up to it. He wants to transfer to a better program.
But he can't, is the point. Like, if he came out and said, "I want to go to USC because it's a better program," no one would let him do it. At least if he says, "I got a sick family member," then at least he's got a chance to do it.
See, here's where I disagree with you, because what we're seeing more and more with these seniors at the seniors at mid major and below programs are absolutely doing that. I mean, RJ Evans wasn't great, but he was Holy Cross's best player. So he did it to go to UConn. Kyle Vanalis at Central Connecticut straight up said, "I want to leave Central Connecticut before my senior year to go to a program where, or for a graduate year where I can play immediately and go to the NCAA tournament in a bigger conference." And he had 8-10 schools falling all over themselves to go after him. So that absolutely happens now with this stupid senior loophole. This is different. But don't say players can't do it, because players under the clearinghouse are doing it now.
Well, no, what I'm saying is, it's a lot easier, like, okay, on the senior level, if I've graduated and I have a chance to go somewhere for my fifth year, no coach or very few coaches are going to actually bar me from making that transfer, even though they technically could. But
unless they're named Phil Martelli.
Well, unless they're named Phil Martelli, yes. But if I'm an incoming freshman, then coaches are not afraid of the public relations hit. They're absolutely willing to say, "No, you're not going to get out of your letter of intent." And I think we need to give kids more support than that, because look, the letter of intent, as we've seen in a lot of publications here recently, and for those who were following along, we knew it beforehand, it's incredibly one-sided. It's in the entire mechanism of the letter of intent is supportive of the school in to the exclusion of any support for the player. And, you know, we need to have some counterbalance there. I mean, the idea that the incoming college athlete has zero leverage whatsoever in this process, when many of them are losing their scholarships because coaches get a better prospect pop up at the last second, particularly on the football side of things, I think it's pretty silly.
Yeah, but I guess I'm looking at this from a letter of the law interpretation. I agree that with everything you said, but under the system we have now, and I don't, Tim Floyd didn't get beat. He didn't get beat here. He recruited him in the national, in the open period, and in the close, he signed a national letter of intent with him. He didn't get beat. This is not like Andy Enfield was recruiting this kid beyond the last week and a half. Andy Enfield sat in his office, said, "I got to make an impact here. Who's the guy in the top 100 that we could flip easiest?" He went after that guy and he flipped him.
So?
That doesn't make it right.
Well, it doesn't make it wrong either. I mean, look.
What's the point of being a program outside of a Power 5 conference at this point? Yeah, I'm saying it because my team is now.
I was going to say, you're no longer in a Power. You weren't saying this 3 years ago.
I dislike.
Now you're the populace. Now you're supporting the little guy.
A record, if you go way back. I disliked every part of the Wiggins, the Doug Wiggins saga at UConn when they flipped him from St. John's. I disliked every part of what UConn did there. And it was a kid that UConn didn't need, which is part of what ticked me off for. And also, the kid was a cancer in the locker room, it turned out, and wasn't very good at basketball.
Well,
I didn't like it then, and my team was benefiting from it. So I am consistent on this.
But look.
If this happens, and it will happen, I agree with you. Look, if he stays at UTEP, he's going to be miserable, and he's going to transfer eventually. I think he should be allowed to transfer, but should have to sit out a year.
Why?
He should be able to get out of his letter of intent.
Why?
And play at USC. Because once
no lesson will be learned by that. It'll just make the kid miserable for a year. I mean, look, ultimately,
Are you sure?
Here's the thing.
We're assuming he's going to be miserable.
I'm going to go ahead and assume that, yes. Because he's going to El Paso. He's going to be miserable.
He knew that when he signed up for it.
Look, everybody changes their mind. I'm fine with it. My thing is this. There is no equitable way to distribute talent in college sports. There's just not, because college sports is not, it's just not based on equity.
Right.
It's ultimately, it's a pyramid structure. And you're, just because you managed to temporarily land a player and you were at a lower station than that player should have theoretically been at, doesn't mean that you have some kind of, unalienable right to that player from this point forward. You know, I think that just because a kid commits somewhere and then maybe has a change of heart, we tend to think, well, your loyalty should be to that program you originally committed to. I don't necessarily agree. Lots of kids get passed over in the shuffle. Lots of kids make dumb decisions. It happens on a pretty consistent basis. I really believe that if you look at things from look at English soccer, for instance. Look at the way that talent flows there. I mean, are people complaining because, a kid starts off at the West Ham Academy and ends up at Manchester United by the time he's 20?
No, I think the difference there is every step along the way, the teams involved, quote unquote, get something. And Floyd loses a recruit here. That's, first of all, here's the other thing. If he doesn't get Isaac Hamilton, and again, if he doesn't want to be there, he'll be miserable. He might be miserable. But the other thing, it's not just losing Isaac Hamilton. It's now they're left holding the bag with one fewer scholarship player this year. It's a scholarship. Yeah, they could fill it next year, but what about this year? Their whole year is built around Isaac Hamilton. The program, the season ticket increases, everything. Their offense is going to be built around him. The money they had to get outlaid to be funneled to his people, I'm sure. Now they're out that.
Maybe I would feel different if it was somebody else. But
I'm not saying he shouldn't be able to transfer. I don't like the idea of him transferring now and being immediately eligible.
Why? But
and by the way, here's another reason I don't like that, because this would be an exclusively Isaac Hamilton benefit. Either everyone should have that right or nobody should.
Well, no, not necessarily. I agree with you on that, actually. But I'm of the mindset that, the idea that we're going to lock kids into a letter of intent and yet not hold schools accountable for other kids that they've locked into letters of intent when they decide that they no longer want their services, that I have a problem with. So I agree with you. If it's going to be an Isaac Hamilton right, then let's go ahead and extend that right to everybody. I'd rather extend it to everybody rather than this ridiculous situation that we've got right now where the power is entirely invested in the coaches and not in the players.
Oh, I'd agree with you on that. And it's also if we can extend it to the point of where these kids don't have to hide behind BS excuses, where they can just straight up admit, I want to go to a better program. But it falls back to this NCAA false altruism, Galen, and the student athlete, and we see the starting of the eroding of that with last week's NCAA decision on the EA Sports football video game, where the fear is starting to run a little rampant through the halls in Indianapolis about the whole student athlete structure might be coming, changing. I don't want to say falling apart, but it's certainly changing.
It is changing. And that's something that we need to talk about in regards to what happened with the video game situation this week. In fact, let's go ahead and dive into that. We'll come back to
that. That was me attempting to set you up there.
It's very good. Thank you. You're listening to Hoops HD as we're talking about college sports. Thanks for joining us. Galen Clavio, Lee Delvecchio, joining you here on the show. So the big news this week, the NCAA announced that they were going to be no longer a part of the college football series that EA has been producing for a long time. NCAA's name has been on it since, I believe, 98 or 97. It was one of those. But NCAA football has been probably, I'd say, the third most successful sports franchise in video games behind Madden and FIFA over that time span.
Mm-hmm.
And
FIFA only just would have jumped into that class. It's
funny
that they both, I think it's more of those three games. Those two games separated themselves as being in Madden's class.
Right.
More than one past the other.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. But it's been a very popular game. There's been some grousing about NCAA football over the last 5 or 6 years. It hasn't really caught the fire, the wave that it had when it was on the PS2, but it's still a very popular game that sells very well. But NCAA announced they were no longer going to be a part of it after this itineration, this 2014 itineration. 2014 was the version that came out this year. And so the reasoning for that was that the NCAA, in the current business climate, didn't feel that they could continue on. But they were, you know, they're perfectly...
Can I start with that real quick?
Yeah, go ahead, please.
We didn't feel in the business climate having our name attached to one of the most successful franchises in the history of video games was a good idea.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Okay, sure.
And, of course, you know, for those of you who haven't been following, you really need to read up on the O'Bannon lawsuit. But basically, the O'Bannon lawsuit talks about how the... You know, there's a group of former athletes who were represented in these video games without being compensated, and now they're getting current video or current
all of them.
Which all of them, yes. But then they're also getting current student athletes involved as well, and six of them were just named to the lawsuit, the O'Bannon lawsuit. So a lot of interesting things going on right now as far as this is concerned. Now, Deadspin and a couple of other places reported that there would still be college football games in the future. They would just not be titled NCAA. The Collegiate Licensing Company handles the licensing for all of the teams, so they would apparently have to all sign the agreement individually. You and I were talking about this, and we were listening to all these people saying, well, yeah, there'll be a college football game next year because they'll have these agreements. I really don't see that happening, in large part because the safety of having the NCAA is kind of the catch fence, so to speak, from a liability perspective. That's gone now. And I don't see a lot of these schools, if they're looking this O'Bannon lawsuit in the face, particularly if it gets certified as a class, being willing to say, yeah, we're willing to accept the potential future liability of this just so we can produce a video game.
Right, and I think there will be a game next year, but I've yet to, like you said, I've yet to hear anyone explain why the CLC or the schools would see this decision, they would know why it happened, which is based on the implication there might be a serious liability in one of the largest possible class action lawsuits in American history. We talk about its impact socially and culturally, plus the financial payout. Why these schools would see that, or the CLC, see that's why they got out, when they're involved and go, yeah, no, we'll just jump it. Like, they're not stupid. They're not going to want that burden. They didn't want that burden to begin with. That's why it was the NCAA's game and not the CLC's game. That was the whole point of right. behind the NCAA. I mean, hell, we all know there is no Division I college football tournament. The defending champions are Eastern Washington, remember. Why do people think that Florida is going to decide, yeah, you know what, the NCAA got out because they might be implied in a multi-billion-dollar lawsuit where we'd all be facing heavy damages. Why don't you go ahead and throw our team in there this year? Make sure you get Ben Hill Griffin Stadium. Make sure you get all our logos, our third jersey. Make sure you get the fan chants in our band. But don't put in the players because they can't get any money. It's gonna be. Why would that happen? I think what you will see next year is something similar. And Galen, you'll know this, and the people who are familiar with soccer video games know. You'll see something closer to the Pro Evolution Soccer model. And for those who aren't familiar, for many years, the two competing soccer video games are Pro Evolution Soccer and FIFA. And Pro Evolution Soccer was for years and years considered the best of the best game because the gameplay quality was very realistic. It was very well done, very beautifully designed. It was based by Konami out in Japan. There was just one catch with it, and it's a choice thing and why FIFA's passed them by it because FIFA's improved the gameplay. FIFA is licensed with all the major leagues in the world and all the teams and all the competitions. Pro Evolution Soccer is only is licensed by the individual teams, and they have the Champions League license, which is the big European soccer competition. They have individual teams, but for example, while they have Manchester United and Barcelona, there isn't Arsenal. There is a North End London team that has fake names, fake uniforms, fake everything. It doesn't have the real stadium, but it is obviously implied a copy of it. And the reason they do that is they don't have the – they have not paid Arsenal or the English Premier League to have the Premier League in the game. So what you have is a very cheap knockoff, which has excellent soccer mechanics and everything. But the reason it doesn't sell as well as FIFA is it's not Arsenal. And at the end of the day, people want to play with the real players. And at the end of the day, because people want to play with the real players, that's why NCAA football added things such as we don't put the names – and the jersey, you know, and the player names in the game, but you can just so happen to have the ability in this year's version to download a list of names that will then magically show up on the jerseys. So you will magically have every Florida player.
And the announcers just magically happen to announce all of the names that are in the current year's roster.
Yeah, so that's what I think will happen with next year's game. I think you will see a game where it will be Florida University instead of University of Florida. And they'll have a game there. It'll be like this year's. And that's going to be interesting, Galen, because all the public sentiment right now is on the player's side for the case. I'm siding with them. I wonder how people will change when they realize that the outcome of this lawsuit could get rid of a video game with features they like.
Well, and here's the thing that gets me. I understand that. I've done research in this area. I've talked about it with the media before. Look, they've been using real players in these games since the late 90s, if not earlier. I mean, it's just, anybody who's played the games has known that your roster is 95% accurate. And it's, yeah, the names aren't technically in the game, but the players are there. The likenesses are there.
Mm-hmm.
This organization makes so much money, and it's funny to me because, you know, you've got the NCAA is the shield organization, and then you've got people saying, well, the CLC is the one that makes these negotiations for these teams. They don't need the NCAA. It's all the same people. The NCAA represents the exact same schools as the CLC. And so the idea that one entity is not the same as the other entity, yeah, technically business-wise that's true, but in reality, in the way that they act, they are the same. But there's so much money being made with these games, with television in general, you know, particularly with all of the networks that are popping up, the Big Ten Network, the Pac-12 Network, so on and so forth. Is it really that out of the realm of possibility that we just take some of that money and give it back to the people who are being featured in the games?
Yeah, I think it's a reasonable request. But, and, you know, to bring it back to college basketball, since we're in a HoopsHD.com podcast,
yes.
The O'Bannon case, it's Ed O'Bannon, of course, one of the stars of the 1995 UCLA National Championship team, back when UCLA was a national championship program, they're dead to rights on the college basketball game, because it's not a coincidence that back when they made college basketball video games, every roster of every team in the game's entire starting lineup wore the same jersey numbers as every team in real life in college basketball wore the starting. Like, it's a coincidence. The 04 UConn team, the starting lineup was featuring guys who were wearing jersey numbers 4, Ben Gordon, 50, Emeka Okafor, 32, Denham Brown. You know, they're dead to rights there. With football, you got moving numbers. You can try this farce of an argument that it's just a coincidence that number 15 for Florida's quarterback happened to be a white guy that looked like Tim Tebow and had his characteristics. But there, you can't possibly argue it for the basketball one. They're dead to rights on that. And I think in every decision that's come down in this case, Galen, has the NCAA appeared to maybe win one yet?
No.
No, I mean, this case is breaking completely one direction, and that's against the NCAA. It's not helping them when things are coming out in court documents where the people involved with the games are just talking about it, or straight up admitting that it's designed to be after the players, because I feel like this could almost end up with the fans get blamed. I'm envisioning Mark Emmert and the president of EA Sports saying, you wanted a realistic game, we gave one to you, and now look what you've done. You've ruined the whole system.
Right.
But I agree with you that there's got to be a way where I think it's completely illogical that there's no other walk in life in which someone would generate millions of dollars of revenue and have no ability to access it. And my idea, and you and I disagree on this, I like what the PGA Tour does. They have this stupid year-end championship playoff thing because playoffs are what people like to watch in America. The winner of it, except for football, of course, college football.
Right, well, of course.
But now we've solved that, we think. The winner of the FedEx Cup, it's called, gets $10 million. But they don't just get $10 million. It's an annuity. And the players get who win it get access to it when they turn 50, because at age 50 you're no longer eligible for the PGA Tour. You have to go on to the Champions Tour, which is the senior tour. So I like the idea of they don't want to pay the players. And keep in mind, the NCAA will never want to do that. They'll never want a system in which, even if it is, they'll want to be able to say it's not paying the players.
Right.
So the idea I had is if you give them a percentage of the profits somehow, and it's put into an annuity, a trust, where they don't just have immediate access to it, because the NCAA can then hide it behind it as being, instead of what they hate, oh, look at this, we're looking out for the future of our student athletes. We know
right. So
many of them may not get jobs, and it's tough with college football to go to class and to get a degree and to finish a degree. Now, we've put this away. This is like a 401k investment that when they graduate, they can have access to this over X number of years, and it's a percentage investment profits. It's not just giving them raw cash, which most college football players are probably getting anyway, at the good programs. So that was my idea, that it gets paid off, that they get an investment, a certain X amount of TV revenues, get paid into an annuity, an investment that the players have access to. I think this should go to just the revenue sports. Obviously, that will never hold up in court on fairness. Let's worry about what we can handle right now. And I think right now, the NCAA is cruising towards a position where it's kind of like how we know the Lakers should amnesty Kobe Bryant, but they're not going to. And now the Yankees should trade Robinson Cano if they're 7 games out, but they're not going to. The NCAA should be looking towards a settlement at this point, because they're clearly dead in court right now with this thing. They are dead to rights. One, I think they're accurately, they should be, they are guilty of what Ed O'Bannon's accusing of them. And two, every decision's gone against them. So either the NCAA can look for some sort of settlement with an annuity-based payment structure, or they could take this thing to court, cry, have Mark Emmert on the stand, crying about the downfall of the student athlete, and owe billions of dollars in revenue to every athlete.
From this point forward.
Yes. And the ones that they already owe, and going forward, yes.
And just
so to NCAA, you're going to lose either way. You can attempt to save face with an annuity plan or some payment plan, or you could go on with this canard where you're going to lose in court and you look like morons.
And look, my big issue, and the reason that we disagree on this, I feel like there's been enough pussyfooting around with this. We don't need to add an annuity plan per se. Just give people money. You know, the idea, look, ultimately, there's so much money being made off of student athletes. I hate that term. There's so much money being made off of athletes on the collegiate level that, you know, whether it's television, whether it's video games, what have you, that the idea that we're going to give it to them, but hey, we're going to hold it in reserve so you can maintain this mythical amateur status. I mean, it's for the birds.
Right, well, I would agree with you. I'm just trying to, as I told you, I was coming up with it from the point of view of, at the end of the day, it's a call that the NCAA has to make.
I understand.
And that's the only thing I can possibly see them being okay
well,
with.
Well, I ultimately think the NCAA...
They should be able to just give cash out. They're not going to.
What the NCAA is banking on, because you're right about the legal aspects of this, they are dead to rights on this situation, and if they don't know it, then they really need to hire some new lawyers. But...
They hire some new lawyers to begin with.
Ed
O'Bannon's lawyers are killing them in court.
What I think they need to realize, the NCAA, is that they're banking on the politicians to save them at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're planning on going to the senators and the representatives of the various states and saying...
Specifically, the Texas people, James and Oklahoma, the big states where college... You're not going to get it out of the New York... you're not getting this... out of
the Northeast.
Times. You're not getting this out of our Senator Jim Hines.
Chuck Schumer.
Chuck Schumer's not going to be in there. But you're going to get it out of this. I don't know if you'll be able to get it out of the senators in California.
Yeah. James Inhofe will probably stand with the
on Louisiana, on Georgia, on Mississippi, on Alabama. You're going to be counting on the Southern senator strategy to keep your ass in this.
Right.
And you're going to be able to get. You're absolutely going to be able to get. Jim Bunning out of Kentucky. So, the one who went to Louisville. Anyway, but yeah, go ahead with your point on why they would go to the senators.
The point is, they're expecting legislation, or at the very least, the power of the, you know, the congressional committee to override anything that happens in the courts at the end of the day. And I don't think that's a great strategy because...
No, it's not.
Yeah, you know, well, for many reasons. And if you need those explained to you, then maybe you shouldn't be listening to this podcast. but ultimately, they have not approached this well. And part of it, I think, is the NCAA has gotten so used to... And that, when I say the NCAA, folks, I don't mean the NCAA as some, like, weird monolithic entity. I mean the NCAA and all of its member institutions that make the rules, that do the things that they do on a regular basis. They've gotten so used to bullying people out of court. They've gotten so used to shoving athletes around, shoving coaches around, shoving state legislatures around. You know, and even in a situation where they do get a legal challenge, they've gotten used to buying off the plaintiffs and, you know, locking things down in non-disclosure agreements. They can't do that.
This case, they don't have that out.
Right. Nobody amongst O'Bannon or any of the people that joined or any of these six athletes that joined is in the least bit interested in settling. And that's what I think is fascinating about this, because the one primary weapon that the NCAA has in its arsenal, which is the extreme, ridiculous amount of money that they make every year off of the NCAA basketball tournament television contract, they can't use it in this situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's the one argument they've always had, which years ago I actually kind of agreed with every new multi-billion-dollar television deal around college sports and conferences and networks and tournaments that goes up and the price tags go up and up, the counter argument of the athletes receive a $30,000 a year college education gets weaker and weaker and weaker. If this is back in the day when there was one NCAA television contract, you could argue that versus a player's $200,000, you know, if a school's getting 200 grand a year for TV rights versus each player's getting, you know, 150 grand worth of an education, then maybe you can argue that. But when a player's getting a 30 grand a year education and the school's taking in $20 million a year in TV money and revenue, it's not an argument that holds water.
Right.
It doesn't, the scale is off of the balance.
I mean,
justice is blind, but justice is also holding a scale. And justice might not be able to see things, but it can tell when the scales lean in one way.
You're also trying to argue, okay, you know, what I love about this equivalency approach that the NCAA has taken, where, you know, so let's look at it from basketball's perspective. Let's say I am a decent, like, four-star prospect in the state of Texas, all right? And I have two scholarship offers on the table. I can take a scholarship to Texas Tech, where it would maybe cost me $1,000 a year if I wasn't on scholarship to go to Texas Tech for 4 years, if I'm in state. And the other scholarship offers from Notre Dame, where regardless of where I live, it's going to be $50,000 a year to go there. So I have $200,000 worth of school with one scholarship, and I have $4,000 worth of school for 4 years with another scholarship. And somehow the NCAA wants us to say those are equal. It's this equivalency argument that just drives me up the wall. And the, you know, when you look at it from sport to sport, it's they want to say all athletes are the same. Well, no, they're not.
If the very structure of it, if they're all equivalent, then how come we have three divisions?
Right.
I mean, and they'll say, well, the member institutions choose not to offer scholarships. But you can believe that the basketball players at Swarthmore are every bit as good as the basketball players in Indiana. Which is like, I mean, come on. Let's have one basketball tournament. If they're the same, then let's, all right, some schools offer scholarships. So if you want to argue that's the only difference, then let's have them all in one tournament. Let's have them all in one tournament. Let's see what happens.
Yeah.
And you know, but the NCAA, you know, when it comes to paying attention to things, you know, they're proving specifically with one institution in North Carolina that, you know, it's hard to pay attention to the missteps when you've got so many.
So the other big story that popped up this week, and this, you know, I've been a little hesitant to even talk about this for a variety of reasons, but man, it's just the situation at North Carolina is really remarkable at this stage. And the Cliff Notes version and maybe I get a couple of details wrong here, so I apologize, but there was a scandal that occurred over, it was about a 7 or 8 year period of time.
And we thought at first it was just a football scandal involving Butch Davis.
Right.
Butch Davis was a head coach of football in Miami, so naturally everyone gravitated towards that's where the scandal was. When Butch Davis is probably the cleanest coach of football Miami's had in quite a while.
Yeah, no, I mean, I can't completely disagree with that. As a person who worked there, absolutely. You know, and look, the thing with Miami is most of the people involved with Miami sports are fully willing to admit that they have outright broken the rules, and they don't really have any compunction about that. They're perfectly fine with that.
I always respected them. I never had an issue with Miami because you knew what you were getting there.
Right. So
I totally respect if it's up front. They have a huge compliance office, and it's not going to matter.
Right.
It is what it is. Yeah. I'm fine with. It's the sanctimonious programs such as, I don't know, the North Carolina basketball program.
Well, and that's the thing. And I know that particularly with what happened at Indiana in the late 2000s with the Kelvin Sampson scandal, quote unquote, which was basically Kelvin Sampson sending too many text messages and someone at the NCAA being offended that Kelvin Sampson was breaking the rules because it made the NCAA look bad.
Yeah, well, to be fair, he didn't have a history of it.
Well, and to be fair, you know, the NCAA had named him as the president of their ethics committee in 2006.
Yes, I mean, at no point that could have seemed like a good idea. Indiana. God, he had a history everywhere. And that's why it was cool with Indiana. They knew what they were getting. It didn't work out. They fired him. They moved
right
on.
Right. But anyway, North Carolina has made a career out of quietly, as you know, as people in that part of the country want to do, but quietly reminding everyone that they're better than everybody else in terms of morality and college athletics. And so this scandal that we've been seeing very slowly develop over the last couple of years expanded from being what most people thought was just a football-based scandal to something that's encompassed the basketball team as well, where athletes were sent to a particular department on campus, the African American Studies Department, if I'm not mistaken, and were taking phantom classes, were being given grades for work that they weren't doing, were getting no-show grades, so on and so forth. And you know, the previous athletic director ended up having to hand things over, I think, to a legislative member or a former governor. There was a big report that was made where they basically said, oh, you know what, we actually did everything that we possibly could in this situation. Everything's fine. And there was a recent story that popped up, I guess it was today or yesterday, and what did that say exactly?
Yeah, Dan Cain of the News Observer down in
Fayetteville.
Well,
another former hometown of mine, believe it or not.
And he's done. Dan Cain's done some great reporting on this, and this is no exception. This came out today. Newly released. I'm just quoting from the beginning of the story. Newly released correspondence shows the faculty leader at UNC Chapel Hill watered down a report into academic fraud to lessen the chances the NCAA would come back to campus. The correspondence shows that hours before the report's release on July 26, 2012. Faculty Council Chairman Jan Boxall sent the three faculty authors a last-minute email. It suggested that they rewrite a sentence that painted a picture of a department manager creating bogus classes to protect athletes' eligibility to play sports. The authors grudgingly agreed to it, and some key information disappeared from the final version. Boxall wrote the request came from the other faculty on the council's executive committee, quote, "The worry is that this could further raise NCAA issues, and that is not the intention," she said in the email. So we finally got, I think we found the floor. This went from being one thing we thought about four or five of the top players on North Carolina's very highly rated preseason football teams around 08-09 to being a wider problem around encompassing many years across many high-profile sports at North Carolina, where straight up now, the order was for the faculty to rewrite the report so the NCAA wouldn't keep coming back. All the cards are on the table. We want to lie in the report so we don't get in more trouble with the NCAA because we are royally screwed across our two biggest sports.
Yeah, well, in basketball especially, because what occurred during this time period, and in fact, we know for certain that the 2009 championship occurred during this time period.
Yeah.
But there's a possibility, I think, that the 2005 championship was also impacted during this time period.
Basically, any player at the University of North Carolina who took any course in the African American Studies Department could be involved.
Right.
Now, I don't want to stereotype, but that's a lot of players. If you look it up, and a lot of majors in Afro-American studies who are involved, and the problem people have raised is that the NCAA hasn't said a thing on this, and you don't have the feeling this is like a Miami football scheduled situation to bring it back, where they're looking around and waiting. It doesn't seem like the NCAA even knows what to do here, because
right.
It's so broad and such a fraud. You're talking about multiple national championships that could be vacated here if they really enforce things with any level of common sense.
Yeah, but okay, but on a scale of, or not a scale, but on a rating of 0 to 10, with 0 meaning no chance and 10 meaning they're already on their way, what would you give the NCAA's chances of actually fully investigating and levying appropriate punishments against North Carolina for this?
I've been watching the British Open. Lee West was at what, -3?
Yes. Minus two.
-5. There's no chance. And part of it, it's not even just, it actually benefits North Carolina how insanely large the fraud is. Where would you even start, Galen?
Well, okay, so let me ask you.
You would have to technically declare with this absurd thing they do. You'd have to vacate any game involving any student-athlete who was involved in the class. Well, that's every football and basketball game since probably at least 2005.
Yeah.
And two national championships, multiple Final Fours, and at the most storied program, one of them in the sport. And they should do that, and they should investigate it, but they've got so many other fish to fry, as we mentioned, I don't think they're going to. And I think they might look into it once other things die down. Have they finally closed up the Miami investigation?
No, they have not yet. Yeah.
This needs all of the Miami resources.
But here, okay, so I guess the question is, are they not investigating it because they're busy, or are they not investigating it because they don't want to? Because frankly, I look at the Miami situation and I look at the North Carolina situation, and when it comes down to the supposed mission of the NCAA, the North Carolina situation, to me, is a far greater threat to what the NCAA supposedly holds dear than anything that's going on at Miami. So why all the attention on one and really, frankly, no attention on the other?
Yeah, well, the Miami one came up first, to be fair. But, like, you know, Miami, a guy gets, you know, $5,000. North Carolina, the guys aren't going to class. They're going to classes that don't exist. This is academic fraud. This isn't like, this is my, like, North Carolina's accreditation should be in jeopardy here, I think, as an institution.
Right.
Forget about losing an 09 title. I mean, this is literally just, the whole University of North Carolina Chapel Hill institution is dragged down with this. This is not just a football problem. This is a university problem. And you're talking about chairs of academic departments and presidents of the school. This is so much worse. I agree with you. And I think it's that we learned really publicly with the Shabazz Muhammad case at UCLA, we learned what we always suspected, which is that they absolutely, the people who work in these cases take preconceived biases into them, which is they have predetermined notions of guilty or not guilty, usually guilty. They take them into when they make these decisions. They were hell-bent to find Shabazz Muhammad ineligible, and by God, they couldn't do it, but they could have done it. And that's what's going on here. North Carolina, I really think they just don't want to look into it, either because they're on North Carolina's side, or, as I believe, because they just don't want to take the trouble to do it.
Well, you know, but here's the thing. I feel like the NCAA absolutely plays favorites with this stuff. And, You know, I think the Kentucky people are ridiculous and stupid and paranoid on a bunch of different levels. But I do think that they have a bit of a point in that they're over-targeted by the NCAA. And, you know, they've managed to create a situation in the last 5 or 6 years where the NCAA can't touch them. I mean, everything's done so secretively that they don't have to worry about it. You know, and a place like Kentucky gets irritated because they look at what UCLA, who was the darling of the NCAA for a couple of decades, was able to get away with. And it's like, well, wait, why can't we get away with that? We're Kentucky. You know, Indiana used to be, to a certain extent, a darling of the NCAA, but then they hired Kelvin Sampson, and suddenly yep. suddenly you're the enemy.
And with UConn, I mean, don't get me wrong, UConn committed violations, and they should have paid a price. But when you've got Jim Calhoun up there, you know, waving his publicly waving, talking down to the NCAA and like almost backhand slapping them, it's not going to help. At a certain
right.
point, either do you want to take your medicine, which is what Carolina has done and UCLA has done, and be quiet about it, or Miami, you embrace it, you know, and you just don't care. And if you do that, the NCAA is going to go out of their way to find something on you.
Yeah, and that's the thing with North Carolina. I mean, this has been the standard bearer since the retirement of John Wooden for what the NCAA wants to project as their public image. You know, I mean, Dean Smith.
I don't know why they didn't pick Kansas, but
well, but if you look at the history of Kansas, Kansas does not play by the rules, but Kansas also put themselves in a position where they were hard to touch. You know, and frankly, look, they picked on Kansas post-championship in 1988. People forget that. That team was on probation the year
right.
after.
They forget about it because at the same time, the Kentucky story blew up.
Right, exactly. You know, so North Carolina, you look at the way that the NCAA deals with them, and they don't really want bad things to happen to the Tar Heels because so many people look at that as being the program that is everything right with college basketball. And it's not as big of a deal with college football, but with college basketball, it absolutely is. But college basketball is really where the big issues lie, I think, because you're looking at this academic fraud, and you're looking at the cover-ups of the academic fraud, and it all extends back to the basketball team, and no one seems to want to say anything or do anything about it. And I just find that fascinating.
Memphis is another example. Everyone was so wrapped up in the Derrick Rose case. I mean, there are two national championships that were won that are implied with this North Carolina.
Yeah, exactly.
That would be cut and dried.
Anywhere else.
I mean, wiped from the book. Cut and dried.
If this was Florida, if this had happened at Florida, we would have vacated titles in 2006 and 2007. Yeah, I mean, it's
this is worse because that would be 6 and 7. This is completely separate recruiting classes.
Right.
Years apart, same violations, losing an 09 final. Carolina made the 08 Final Four, right?
Yeah, I believe they did, yeah.
The Roy Williams Kansas game.
Yes.
And there was a little bit of drama there. and you know, multiple Final Fours being lost, multiple recruiting classes, fraud across multiple sports, and at the end of the day, I don't know if anything's going to happen.
See, you know, this is where I think the NCAA's approach to policing these sorts of things breaks down. Because, you know, is this something that Roy Williams needs to be held accountable for? I don't know. I mean,
I don't know either. I feel like this is a program that was from all the stories, no one has said this is something that changed when Roy got hired.
Right, exactly. That's the thing. Some of these issues are systematic to individual programs.
Well, Roy knew about this when it was around when Dean Smith was there and Matt Doherty was there, and Roy knew about it because he knew about it, but he just wasn't going to change it.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe this only goes back to when Roy showed up, but we don't know because there's no investigating going on.
Right, and that's the problem.
Other than the News Observer, who's done a great job with it.
Yeah. So, you know, look, this is the pitfalls that we deal with. I'm not the sort of person that sits there on the one hand and castigates the NCAA for overstepping its bounds and for being anti-athlete and for creating all of these ridiculous rules. And then on the other side says, well, wait, why aren't you investigating more? But I will say that the NCAA their entire reason for existence. If you read Walter Byers, if you look at what they set themselves up as from the late 50s onward, their entire reason for existence was being the police officer of college athletics. And that's all well and good if you're going to apply the rules equally. But the complaint about them has been since the 60s and 70s onward that certain teams, certain programs, certain coaches were considered above the law. Others became public enemies. UCLA under John Wooden was, you know, pristine, was not touched. Whereas we know things occurred under that regime that should have drawn significant NCAA penalty. Meanwhile, you get a guy like Jerry Tarkanian, who built his entire program at Long Beach State and at UNLV off of what he saw when being an assistant for John Wooden, and Tarkanian ends up being public enemy number one for the NCAA for a decade, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Longer than that, really, a decade and a half.
I mean, and again, at the end of the day, this case is scary because say what you will about paying players and we have and, you know, who gets what revenue. The players weren't going to classes that didn't exist. I mean, after that, what's the point?
Right.
Like, it literally is – there is no – you can interpret, well, oh, they don't get money, but they get paid in a scholarship. They were in college and they weren't going to any classes. I mean, there's no other way to interpret it.
And ultimately, more people should be concerned about that if they're going to get wrapped up in all of these things that we've talked about. Yeah, you know, I see people getting worked up all the time about, you know, college athletes wanting to get compensated for video games or wanting to get more than just the scholarship money that they're being paid. That people get worked up about that, like, why are these kids acting this way? You know, they should be thankful for what they've got. And yet the entire system is built in large part around these huge hypocrisies that exist. The supposed shining city on the hill of a place like North Carolina or a place like UCLA, and you've got no-show classes, you've got cheating in relation to the system that everybody's supposed to be playing under with player payments, with whatever, not necessarily at North Carolina, but at UCLA, these things are happening, yet no one's really getting upset about those things unless it's directly affecting a team that they like.
Yeah, this one's weird. This Carolina one feels different. This one is so, to me, much worse, because, like, I can make an argument for why a linebacker who grew up in the inner city and has nothing should get, God forbid he gets a grand on the side, but they're not even going to class.
Right.
The classes don't exist, and it's for multiple.
Well,
and it's a whole department of the school.
Ultimately,
it feels worse. And I know that it's probably some people will feel the opposite, and I respect that. But this one just feels worse.
Well, I've become, and I wasn't like this before. It took me a long time to get to this point, but I really feel like there's no need for us to be tying our athletics to our educational system. I mean, we've become so used to it that it's hard to envision a different system than what we currently have. And there's probably ways to alter the system that we have so that the names stay the same. But the education part of it doesn't need to be there. And the more that we insist that the two be tied together, that it's not just you're developing as an athlete, but you're also developing as an intellectual being and as a scholar or whatever, the more we insist upon that, the more these hypocrisies grow.
Mm-hmm.
And the more
and it's funny, it's like we don't still have the Roman Senate, but
right.
We still insist on this idea of developing the body and the mind. Like, you know, the players, let them major in basketball. Like, nobody is – Tyler Zeller isn't going to college to major in econ, all right? He's going to play ball and get paid, all right? And he's going to make more than anyone else who majors in econ, majored at school last year, by the way.
Well, part of it, and this is what I'm most curious about, why are we so concerned with what happens to the athlete after they get out of college, supposedly? Yeah, that's always the big thing. It's like, well, we need to prepare people for life outside of sports. Well, why? Like, who is that really, whose issue is that? Isn't that the individual's issue? It's certainly not a societal issue. Like, if you're making a decision that I'm going to go to college to play sports, okay, great. But I shouldn't have any sort of additional intellectual responsibility on, you know, as an observer to ensure that you have a job after you're finished college. I went to college to be a broadcaster. No one fucking cared what happened to me after I graduated.
Galen, I care.
But thank you.
Well, no, I think it comes, I think there's some sort of, maybe it's some deep-seated guilt there, because at the end of the day, I like sports. I respect the athletes, but I mean, should Indiana University give out 20 women's soccer scholarships, or should they give out 20 more academic scholarships?
Well, but
I mean, then it's Indiana University.
But then why? Okay,
it should be more. I you can't make the defense, I think, that it shouldn't be the academic ones.
But nobody's making them give out the additional athletic scholarships.
Right. Exactly. It's just we decided to. Why are we adding a rifle program? Well, because. Why are we adding this? Because, I mean, I respect those athletes. It's tough. I'm not saying, like, it started out back in the day, intramurals, a way for the, you know, the student might have something to get out from the books. And it's just grown into something insane. And it's fine to have this. It's fine to have these big-time college sports. But the idea, we're still trying to tie it into a system that clearly, it's like trying to use the same ropes to hold a sailboat to shore that you would use on a giant ocean liner. Like, you progress from using the sailboat to being able to captain an ocean liner, but you're not going to use the same ropes to tie the same the boats down. Bigger boats. It's like now we see with these giant contracts, these schools have all this money now, this $27 million a year for, like, the Pac-12 schools. What are they going to do with all this money? Now they've already invested it in the football staff. Well, now we're going to pay more for our women's soccer coach, and we're going to build a development, like the whole basketball development facilities. You don't need these. We don't need an additional gym. That's why you have an arena. But everyone's got one. Everyone's got to build one.
It's so dumb. And this is why one of the many reasons I get irritated with college athletics from a budgetary perspective, because you constantly hear that. Well, hey, only 10 or 8 or whatever the number is this year.
Yeah.
College athletics programs make a profit. You know, the rest of them are losing money. Bullshit. Yeah,
it's all on how you work the numbers.
Right.
But there are revenue losing. Like, do people really think, and they had a great year, do people really think the University of Louisville is making $20 million more a year on the sport of basketball than anybody else? Do people really think that? Do they really think that, like, Carolina and Indiana aren't making the same amount, and Kentucky aren't making the same amount of money?
Right.
Really? It's all in how you account it.
Yeah, and the idea that, hey, we're actually at a budget deficit in our athletic program, yes, that's because you increased your football assistant coach salaries by 40% this year, and you built that new field hockey facility. If you had an honest accounting of where the money was going, and you had people actually saying, you know, that money doesn't need to be spent there. If we look at what we were making in 1995 versus what we're making in 2013, wow, we're making a shitload more money.
And it ties back to what we talked about. Oh, God, yeah. Because it's kind of like if you own houses and you rent them, you can't just sit on the income.
Right.
But then it grows and grows. And in the NCAA's case, for the O'Bannon case, you can't have all this sitting around income accruing interest. You have to spend it.
Because you're a nonprofit.
Yeah,
let's close on this story. What do you make of this Pac-12 versus Grand Canyon University story?
I love Grand Canyon University because for years and years they were a division, like, they played baseball in the WAC at Division I. And for years and years, they were like every other school in the country. This isn't some University of Phoenix that just started up. And about 10, 15 years ago, they decided, let's just be up front. This is when the college boom happened in the late 90s. Let's just go as a for-profit institution. Grand Canyon University is ostensibly a for-profit institution. We're going to forego the tax breaks. Now, I'm not saying they did this because they felt guilty.
Right. not some crisis of conscience that
they
led to this.
They decided, the beautiful folks out in the canyon area, which is might be the most gorgeous place in the United States if you love natural scenery, not just the Grand Canyon, all the surrounding area. And I don't have a skin that's conducive to anything, any sunlight for more than 10 minutes, but I even admired it when I got to see it 2 years ago. They decided the benefit of being a for-profit institution, the money we could make outweighed at the very base they did this, outweighed the tax benefit they got of being a not-for-profit academic institution or whatever state funding they would get. They don't get state funding. They don't get any tax breaks. But they're a for-profit school, and they still make a shitload of money, just like the University of Phoenix does online. Just like Southern New England University does. Oh, no, sorry, Southern New Hampshire University. That's the big one up here. There is no Southern New Hampshire University. It's an online thing for business professionals to take courses. It's straight up, you want to learn things, you're going to pay, we're going to make money off of it. So Grand Canyon University, you may have heard, folks, that the Western Athletic Conference has had a bit of a rough few years. the long and short of it is the WAC has dropped football, but there's still a conference, and they needed another member for basketball. Grand Canyon University, under head coach Thunder Dan Marley, an idol of my youth, Thunder Dan is the head coach. They're joining the WAC basketball. Grand Canyon University, a for-profit institution. Well, Larry Scott in the Pac-12 conference will not stand idly by, having launched the Pac-12 network, having launched a TV contract with Fox and ESPN collaborating and taking in $28 million a year per school. They will not stand idly by and let a for-profit institution besmirch the great nonprofit that is the National Collegiate Athletic Association and the Pacific 12 Conference. They were not formally refusing to schedule. They have what is it, filed an injunction or something?
Yeah, they tried.
And they are going to form a pact. Their schools will refuse to schedule Grand Canyon in any sport. By the way, sucks for Grand Canyon, I guess. They can't take a paycheck to be a body bag for Stanford in basketball and probably beat UCLA in basketball, as we've learned in the last couple of years.
Yep.
But they're going to be all right. Grand Canyon's going to be fine. They're just going to get the paycheck from the Mountain West games and all the Midwest. There's plenty of conferences outside of the Pac-12. Grand Canyon's going to be fine. It's hysterical. Larry Scott and the Pac-12 are acting like they can't believe there is a for-profit institution in the NCAA. While they just added Colorado and Utah, nothing but profit. They're bringing nothing in basketball or football. I mean, fuck nothing. At least Texas A&M's got Johnny Football added to the SEC. Can someone tell me what Colorado or Utah has added to the Pac-12? I'm still waiting, other than cross-country.
Tad Boyle.
Yeah, and that's and they're openly questioning this while they started a network. The Pac-12 network is the answer to the question no one asked, and it's for profit. It literally doesn't exist for any other reasoning. It's like when the Big Ten network, Galen, as you know, they dumped all the academic programming after a couple of years because they said nobody gives a shit. We're just going to show more Big Ten legends.
Yeah, and, you know, look, ultimately, I understand.
Stand with Grand Canyon University and Thunder Dan Marley.
You stand with it. We need to make a banner. Put it up on the website.
We're here to make money, and here's the bullshit, and smell it.
Well, and, you know, and I have a hard time arguing against that. I mean, look, you listen to the rhetoric in the university environment, and there's a lot of anti-for-profit school rhetoric, and some of it's deserved. I mean, a lot of these for-profit schools, they're simply there to try to collect as much student loan money as possible. But you know what? Similar arguments could be made for some of the institutions that are out there that are masquerading as not-for-profits. And
GCU is not a diploma mill, but I'll tell you this. Here's why. GCU offers real classes. North Carolina, I'm not too sure.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, you can't institutionally say we're not going to stand for this type of institution. This is terrible for college athletics, when the entirety of college athletics is terrible for college athletics.
Right. And Galen, you know, that's unfortunate, but I want to close with one thing.
Yes.
You may have seen, folks, if you're on the, and God bless you if you're still listening to the Hoops HD podcast this far in, because it went way over 10 minutes.
It did.
It is the July recruiting period.
Yes.
College basketball coaches are all around the country at sweltering AAU gyms watching the next best and brightest to determine who will get the college scholarships. at one of these gyms was Jim Boeheim, and you know, the gyms are hot, usually not air conditioned, And so, in hot weather, it's easier for elderly gentlemen to fall asleep after the seventh AAU run of the day. And today, somebody, I'm sorry, I don't know who, but it's floating around the internet today, this picture of Jim Boeheim falling asleep at a recruiting tournament. And Galen has not seen the photograph yet. Galen, I'm putting into the chat now, and I want to get your organic reaction to this photograph.
All right, I'm opening the link now.
I'm asleep.
That is so bad. I mean, is that even anybody sitting around him? He's by himself.
He is horizontal. His right leg is laying on the chairs. The left leg is on the floor. And, folks, he didn't just doze off. He is head back. The jaw is open, snoring away. And it really describes the NCAA's reaction to many of the things we described this evening.
Oh, that is classic. I love it.
So, with that note, that's all I've got.
Yeah, that's all I've got, too. Well, it was a cracking first episode here. We'll have more of these as we move forward, but
the site logo, I think. We have to get this picture, the rights to it.
I think it's the Twitter logo, is what it is.
It is, and I also enjoy that behind him is a mural, and you know it's got to be some of this student-athlete BS talking about. It probably talks about don't gamble on the tournament that gives us $3 billion a year in revenue, and don't take money because we're, you know, while we're turning over money hand and fist. And it's about, you know, going to class. And here's one of the high-profile coaches just dozing off in shoes paid for by Nike that, you know, he can't, of course, give away to any of the players once they leave the program.
I think it's actually advertising their sports medicine program, which is even better.
Well, maybe they have a sleep apnea program.
Anyway, Lee Delvecchio joining us here on the pod. I'm Galen Clavius. This is Hoops HD. Thanks for joining us, folks. We'll catch you next time.